If you're thirsty for big business ideas and lessons learned from people who have started up or started over, you've come to the right place. We've got shots of inspiration mixed with a few ounces of advice, delivered straight up by movers and shakers in Saskatoon's business community. So pull up a chair. This round's on us. Welcome to Chamber on Tap.
Ladies and gentlemen, Trina Scollett, how are you?
Hello, T-Bone. I'm good. How are you?
Life is great. Chamber on Tap time.
So excited.
With an exciting guest.
Yes, yes. Jarrett Waddell from Globex Management.
So he's got a lot of great things to say.
Super passionate about business. So much information.
Let's take all the gold from tonight and give
best
it to
parts.
Our podcast listeners.
Yes, for sure.
Here you go.
What are your takeaways from that time? What did you learn about yourself? And I guess when I imagine, as you tell this story, you're literally rolling up your sleeves. Like, there's a lot of true grit, those qualities that really define an entrepreneur. How did your mindset change, and what do you think you learned and took away from that time?
I think one of the biggest lessons that I learned is what everyone believes the worst case scenario in your business is, it turns out that's nowhere near as bad as it might be. And as comical as that might be, you know, everyone builds a business plan and it's like, well, this is what we believe is going to happen this year. And this is what's going to happen in our business if we're 25% short of our target. And this is what's going to happen if we're this different from our target. But it was a real way of planning that's now worked into our business life, which is what happens if everything goes away? And be ready to acknowledge road signs that will come that will make that a reality for you, and be prepared to acknowledge changes in your business faster than we were ever able to or would be willing to acknowledge them in the past. That was a big one. Not that I would say Dan and I were ever in this place, but the reality was, don't ever be above any element of your business. If you're not prepared as a business owner or as an executive to do any of the work that makes your organization or your industry successful, a time will come that will humble you. Mm-hmm. It truly will. So I think that was an important reminder of that for that time. When we were in this period in time of sort of survival, it really was be diligent and care for your business. Care for it like it's a child. Mm-hmm. It will require that much attention. It will require that much hard decision-making, sort of all those things.
No, that's so important. So not only in times of adversity, but I could imagine when the industry did start to recover and you did start to bring back those employees, I bet you looked at them with a new respect, having specifically done their job.
There's no question. In fact, I believe that, you know, Dan and I are what would call, you know, Saskatchewan people, grounded, down-to-earth people. But I think two things happened. One of them is it was a return to the respect. I'll never forget how bad I was sweating. I came out of, if you're a room attendant in a hotel, Travis knows this, Dan knows this. If you're a room attendant in a hotel, so work as hard as you can cleaning your house, and just don't let it stop for about 8 hours. And I'm not talking about walk around and do some things. I mean, work as fast as you can. So some of the lessons that I learned, for example, I know that this is getting very narrow, but I'll give you a specific example. So I've always worked off of an ideal. Our industry has always been based on a fairly typical guest room that you would stay in that's not oversized in the 300 square foot range, gets cleaned in between 28 and 30 minutes. End of story. It's been that way for a very long time. And what I had to do to myself to clean that room in 30 minutes was a big eye opener. So for example, what it did in this very specific context is we said, we have to sort of rethink this. It was a time and motion study. We worked side by side after I stopped sweating with some of our seasoned room attendants. And so for example, we changed that metric to be 38 minutes. And that sounds sort of specific and maybe not so consequential, but that means everything to the people that do that job, mm-hmm. that appreciation. And so there was a lot of lessons to learn in connecting to the operation of the business at the moving parts level.
Mm-hmm. I was going to ask you where the business is at now. Have you sort of reined things back in? Because I know you had gone for property management and laundry services, that sort of thing. Have you sort of reined things back in and narrowed your focus again to hospitality?
Yeah, this last, I don't know if it's 6 months or a year, has been a very new chapter for us now. And one of the silly things we'd say is that, you know, in this organization that we worked for, business strategy in the long term, appropriate thinking, planning to manage risk and to grow the organization was in the DNA of what Dan and I did at all times. COVID made it so that all that planning was foolish. It would mean nothing. You can't anticipate what's coming next. The government is now in control of your business plan, and there's nothing you can do about it. And so we've emerged from that now in this place where when I use the word silly, you'd say, well, how in the world can you possibly build your own organization, be a part of the growth of an organization without some sort of a strong business plan? Well, it's only been about the last 6 months or year that that's come back to life, and we've said, okay, turns out we're not drowning, and we have to get back to this business that we were going to get into in the year before our non-compete expired. So what's happened for Globex in the time since is predominantly our organization is a hotel, resort, hospitality management company. That's sort of the main component of our organization. One of the diversifications that came in COVID is we said, hey, well, if you're going to manage the process of people showing up in your business every single day and collecting their money and cleaning up after them and repairing the damage they've made, wouldn't property management be way easier because you're only doing that once a month? And that type of thinking, as flip as this sounds, usually isn't accurate. Turns out it was bang on. We were lucky that we had a member of our team who said, you know what, let me go get my real estate license. If something goes wrong with Globex, you can lose my salary and I'll be okay as long as you're okay with me moving in this direction. Well, now this individual has been a key player in the launch of the property management division of our company. So in Saskatchewan, that gives you the opportunity for both residential, farm, commercial sales, as well as property management. And we are now in three of those buckets actively because of the work of this individual. So we have the hotels and hospitality, those that are owned, those that are just managed for the other owners. We've got the property management division of the company. And then we also have interest in a general construction company that was built for the purpose of renovating all of our hotels that needed to be renovated when all of that money is typically sent outside the organization. We thought we would have the skills, the knowledge as project managers in that to be able to launch that as well.
Goodness, I feel like I have lots on my plate, but it feels like nothing compared to what we're hearing is going on in your world. So you continue to diversify. You continue to say, what as a business can we do within our business? That's very smart. Would you say that there's a point where you need to continue to focus on what's inherent to your business, like the DNA of your business? Are entrepreneurs at risk if they let things go too far in the diversification sphere?
Yeah, certainly. One of the best lessons that we've learned in business, I'm saying we all speak on our behalf, your behalf, Dan. So we launched a company during COVID that was a horrible failure. It was a tech company designed around contactless ordering. Everybody was used to the QR codes on the table, and that's how you'd see your menu. This was at a time when the regulations in the province were restricting servers' access to tables, and so we wanted people to be able to order and pay through the app, which was not common. In 2021, 2022, there were still no domestically available apps that allowed you to settle your check at your table. Anyway, big, big, big life lesson is a group of us came together with a great concept, and we outsourced our competitive advantage, which none of us were developers. We were great, everybody else was great business thinkers, and me. And we had thought about the business model well enough. We had done what I believed were most of the right things, but we couldn't control the business at its moving parts level because we couldn't weigh in on concepts of was the dev team and the sprints that they were doing accomplishing what was necessary? Was it appropriate, moving fast enough? Was it standing on a tech stack that we could manage into the future? We didn't know it, and it was that was the eventual undoing of that company. So the lesson was, diversification for the sake of diversification is not good. Mm-hmm. Diversification, as you can apply core competencies of you and your team, as it relates to your core business model, beneficial in lots of context if you're up for it. But I think you have to be honest about the fact that you don't know that business as well as you know your core business, and a willingness to pursue it and achieve it. And if that core business is not related to what you do at all and you're reaching, we've learned the lesson that that wasn't the right thing for us. So diversification for the sake of diversification is not something we're going to continue to do. We're going to look for supply chain integration. We've done that before in the large organization that we ran before. There's always going to be opportunities we pay attention to on that front. Very close partner industry we will look at, and I believe that's about as far as we will reach.
Mm-hmm. So how has your industry changed, I guess, since you took over to now? I'm so curious about how it looks like from your point of view. What are your clients' needs when it comes from patrons to staff? Are you having a hard time getting people to join your team working in the hotels? What does it look like for you at this point, and where do you hope to see it going?
Okay, so I'll talk about this at two different levels. At a you run a hotel level, single greatest challenge that we're facing is people. And everybody you talk to says, like, well, it's difficult getting people. Well, the inherent problem that we've got is, if anybody in the room has kids, asking yourself how many people's kids in the room are interested in taking a job cleaning toilets in a hotel. So there are occupations that exist within the building of a hotel that domestically our population aren't interested in doing anymore. And so now, in order for you to continue on, you have to rely on automation and efficiency and immigration. And unfortunately, we don't control the levers of immigration. And so you have to work really, really, really hard at stabilizing the pipeline of people that come in and work with, you know, programs that are not designed to actually function properly, with both the federal, mainly the federal government, but the provincial nominee program in Saskatchewan is working good. It's working okay. If you attempt to work through federal programs, you just can't stabilize it that way anymore. So I would say a persistence on the front of making sure that you're really active in the space of backfilling on the labor front, active with immigration, temporary foreign immigrant workers, SINP programs, is the key to the success of our, one of the keys to success. The other thing I would say is, you've got the hotel environment and you've got the hotel customer, and the hotel customer isn't really expecting anything that they've never expected before. They, top three attributes that matter to them in this sequence are service, Wi-Fi, and cleanliness. Mm-hmm. And you have to deliver on those fronts. And people just don't have patience. This is a competitive enough environment. There's enough choices to make. If you can't deliver on those three fronts, you will lose. Mm-hmm. And so that hasn't changed throughout this process, but expectations continue to rise. So you've got to focus on that. When it comes to our customers being hotel owners that we manage their hotel for them, one of the changes that's come and things that are on our mind is this element of fatigue that I talked about that a hotel owner has, having come through this terrible period. There's lots who will say, I'm just kind of done. There's a lot who will say the hotel management game in Canada is dominated by three different companies, of which we're not one yet. But anyhow, they don't have a great reputation in Western Canada. They're clustered around Central Canada. They have notoriously delivered poor service and did that for owners throughout this terrible period. And owners have a long memory. And so the fortune that we are finding today now is owners that are fed up with being another number in the Rolodex of an organization that takes care of hundreds of hotels. who can't put resources into Saskatchewan, who don't understand that Saskatchewan is a different accommodation market than the rest of the country. Mm-hmm. And it truly is. Sure, there's fundamentals that spread, but you have to know how to go get business here. It's not that you have to deliver on the business in a different way, but you have to know how to go get it here, and you don't do that the same way in other places. So I think our focus really is on stabilizing the workforce, being true to ourselves about what that really means, and a newfound respect because we are hotel owners now. We know what matters to hotel owners, and committing that the only thing that Dan and I have is our reputation. And if we screw this up, this company will go away in an instant. And so we say, treat every single operation like we own it, mm-hmm. and honestly commit to it that way. And that's how we see ourselves moving through the next phase.
Mm-hmm. Well, those sounds like very solid foundations and a very solid approach. How are you reaching your clients and customers? How are you getting these, this new business? What are you relying on?
So other than trying to secure a sawmill operation agreement and a commercial laundry agreement, we've not made a sales call yet. So we became, in June of 2021, two managed hotels, one owned hotel. That other hotel that we managed, we eventually purchased, so now it became two owned hotels and one hotel. We have 10 hotels, two of them owned, eight managed, a year and a half later, and we have 19 different opportunities in our pipeline right now. And all of this has come 100% because of the relationship that we built with our industry. It was an interesting history because Dan and I, working for a private company, we couldn't work for anyone else. You couldn't go get some other business, but we stayed very connected to our industry. We stayed engaged in the business community, and every single opportunity that has come its way since that day has been because our phone rang and someone said, I didn't realize that you weren't working for airline anymore in your own thing. We'd like to talk to you, and we don't need to get to know you. We know you, and we would like you to do some work for us. So we're fortunate, and it's another lesson that I would say is you don't necessarily ever understand how you are going to need your network. Mm-hmm. Within a geographic center, within the business community of Saskatoon, or within the industry that you work in. But had we not participated at a national level with the industry that we participated in aggressively for about 20 years, this would have been a very different story.
Well, absolutely. We talk about that a lot at these gatherings, that it is very important to get to know the people in this room. You just never know how those connections are going to come back to support you in the future, because it is obviously very unpredictable as we go through. Before I open it up to questions, I mean, I could talk to you all night about this sort of thing. It's so interesting. I'd like to know, because you've been in this industry a long time, when you look back and you maybe imagine your younger self, how has your definition of success changed over time? Share it.
Good question. Just about my whole life, it has been about... you know, for the people that are the closest to me, being there and showing up and providing and being able to do everything that you need to do in those personal relationships. Where work is concerned, success is work harder than anybody else. And, you know, something my wife and I have instilled in our kids is these are table stakes. You will work harder than anyone else. Doesn't matter what your skills are. People learn skills. People don't easily learn behavior. Mm-hmm. So always work as hard as you can. I've always got a lot of, I felt good from that. I'm sure that's some kind of terrible problem I've got where I constantly need to like achieve and prove that I can do things to myself. But what changed was when I felt responsible for other people that weren't my family anymore. Mm-hmm. And needing to do the right thing by them. And then the way that you approach situations wasn't just me forcing myself to try and succeed at things for my own personal satisfaction and validation. It is everything I do dramatically impacts the lives of a lot of people, and looking that in the face and going, that's not necessarily cool, that's a responsibility. Mm-hmm. And my definition of success now is not only for the organization that Dan and I own and lead, but for all the people in it, it is, I know and I feel confident that we can do anything and be successful. This team that we have in Globex is pretty special and rare. People that have experienced things that, just the way that our company came to be, the average organization doesn't get to see. So I feel very fortunate that way, but it is everything that we've done and learned and how the terrible situations are that we've come through, how can we do things to set other people up to achieve and experience all the things that Dan and I have achieved already? And so I think that's changed our perspective on how we focus on our team and what success means. It's not just about, you know, the things that we can say, done, successful, win, ring the bell. It is, what could you do that would change the lives of the people that have been with us, been by our side, and had our back the whole time? Mm-hmm. So that's what success is starting to look like for us.
I love that. That's a very positive note to finish this segment on. And you're right, seeing other people succeed because you've paved the way for them, or you're, you know, helping them to fly is must bring that all back to you in a very powerful way. Thank you for sharing this part of your journey with us. You're very interesting. You have a brilliant business mind. I'm sure people are going to need your advice and your services more than ever, because we are constantly changing. So your high-level thinking, your business strategy, your guts and your grit, I think that's something that we're all very impressed with. So thank you very much. I will give a round of applause, and then let's open it up to some questions from the audience.
This has been a distilled version of Chamber on Tap, a live event hosted monthly by the Greater Saskatoon Chamber of Commerce. Check out upcoming dates and speakers at saskatoonchamber.com, or follow the Chamber on Twitter, Facebook, LinkedIn, and Instagram using the handle @thechamberyxe.
Produced at
Sound Lounge by T-Bone.